But I'm on the outside. I'm real pretty. I can see through you. See the true colors. It's inside you.
Hello, hello. And right now we are still waiting on our guests, but my name is Bernadette and we are here at Saving Lives. And I have Art doing all the special mechanicals.
Good morning, good morning. Good
morning. There we go. There's that radio voice that there I love so much.
There it is.
So, yeah, my guest is in traffic, which, you know, is totally understandable because we drive from a little over an hour away to get here. And you had a little bit of traffic, too.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like it's construction season now that the weather's nice.
Of course it is. They need to fix some of the, I don't know, some of the roads that are like awful. I feel like my car is going to fall apart.
Yeah, the potholes. They haven't quite dealt with that stuff yet, right?
No, not at all. So it is Thursday night, and we are at Saving Lives City of Angels Radio. It's 609-241-7103. Feel free to call in if you want to have some insight. What we like to do on this show is have people that are in recovery, that might know people that are in recovery or their loved ones in recovery, come out or call and, you know, participate in sharing the hope. So I guess I could just talk a little bit about myself.
We can talk.
Yeah.
We don't have a whole lot going on. I mean, we have the run coming up in September.
See, that's amazing.
It's summertime now, so.
Is it September 10th?
September 9th, actually. That's the old, that poster was last year's.
Got it.
It's September 9th. We were actually trying to change the date because, you know, I've been having people hound me for bringing Rockfest back, as you see the signs here around the studio.
Yep.
And I tried to do that this year, but it's just impossible trying to get the venue. So it's going to end up being next year, but we're going to bring it back.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, we have a place by us. They do Rock for Recovery at least once a year.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. I want to change it. I want to change our date from September and make it into something a little bit more friendly and have it be the Rock and Run for Recovery.
Oh, that would be amazing.
And have it be an all-night endurance race.
Yes.
In the glow.
So that would be so much fun, like one of those color run types of things.
Yep.
So I did a color run before, and I didn't actually... I ran for like 5 seconds. I thought I would be able to run more, but it was hard. It was just fun, though.
Yeah.
You know, I walked it.
And we'd like to have, you know, like I said, the Rock and Run for Recovery. We can have bands playing all night long.
We yep. have, the show going on. Yeah. That would be...
Yeah, we can try and live broadcast.
Yeah. That would be amazing. That's great. And what does it say? Come with the Angels. So that was, what, last year?
Rockfest was actually 2013, I think, was the last one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was just before my time here.
And we have a ton of people that are in the music business and the music industry that would be happy
yes,
to.
Yes, and I made all those new friends when we played that whole...
last week,
like
right?
11 recovery songs from Ernie White and Tom Riak and Mario DiBartolo.
And that was,
and
was that
Sacco.
Last week?
Yep, that was last week.
Nice.
We played every one of them, and we've been playing them throughout the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? On the radio station now. So
you can't
we
beat
debuted
that.
It last Thursday here on Saving Lives,
yes.
And now we're playing them on a more regular basis.
You can't beat that one bit at all. So how's your daughter doing?
Actually good. She went back to Oregon, so.
Very nice.
It's very quiet in my house now.
Does it feel weird?
Yes. Very.
Yeah. But that's what happens in the summertime. So I guess I'll talk a little bit about myself.
And how was your week?
My week was good. It was busy, hectic, which is all the gifts of being in recovery. You know, there's some days where there's just like too much. Oh my, I feel like there's like, it's not like a plate, it's like a platter. But it's all good stuff. You know, it's my career, my businesses, or helping sponsees out and getting to the meetings, getting to my home group.
Hours in a day, right?
There really isn't. There's just times I want to crawl in a hole for a couple weeks and just like sleep for a little while. But it's life is truly filled me up with so many.
I think I need a hug.
Exactly. But it's life is like afforded me to be able to do all this stuff and fill up, you know, my days. My days don't start anymore with what am I going to use to get out of bed?
Right.
And then it was after the shower, what am I going to use to like get dressed? Because, you know, my addiction took me to that place.
Right.
And for me, I just had an anniversary on June 2nd, which is amazing. So I had 4 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And I never, 4 years to me was like completely unfathomable. When I came into, you know, recovery, I just wanted to come off of the drugs that I couldn't come off of, you know? I thought that I would still be able to be a regular, normal person and, you know, go out with people to the bars and whatnot. But when I went into treatment, they...
We talked about that last week.
Was that 2 weeks ago?
Maybe it was 2 weeks ago. Didn't we say that? Like going out to the bar?
Yeah.
Just kind of replacing it. You can't replace it.
You can't.
It.
You can't do it at all. And I didn't know any of that until I went into treatment. And they're like, yeah, no. You have to stay away from it all. I'm like, wait, what? Like, that doesn't even make sense.
It's called abstinence.
I know. I know. And now, you know, my habit is like junk food, which... Whatever. That'll be a whole other topic.
That's a whole new addiction. You know, we
sure
just have
is.
Addictive behaviors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some kill you and some don't.
I know. This is true. And they say, too, like a lot of times we tend to, addicts in general, tend to replace one behavior with others, but you want it to be healthy behaviors.
It's human nature, and that's exactly right. You want to do something that's going to be more healthy for you than mm-hmm. something that's going to be not so healthy for you.
Absolutely. I totally agree. So I guess maybe I'll share a little bit of my backstory.
Sure.
Why not? It's been a little while since I think I've shared about it. And I didn't speak for my anniversary, so...
Oh, we'll make up for that tonight.
I know, right? Because normally when you have a home group and anniversary, you tend to speak on that date, but you know, things happened and I'm speaking on a later date. So for me, my story, I've shared it before, started with being prescribed medication because of an accident I was in. Really bad car accident, collapsed lung, broken ribs, lacerated liver, internal bleeding.
So your story really did start with, you know, a doctor's visit.
And, it did.
And what you thought was the
right way.
Guided by your doctor.
Yeah, right? for a good 10 plus years, wow. The doctor's prescriptions. And it wasn't until I had to go to a new doctor that they were like, wait, what? We're not giving that to you. And I obviously didn't like that answer, so I found other ways to get it.
Right.
And it took me years of finding the ways and means to get more.
But it still took off innocently as
an accident.
An accident with a prescription that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And that, I feel like I hear that happening so much more. And like literally not a day goes by where there's not something in the paper with somebody passing by accidental overdose or overdose because they picked something up when, you know, they got hurt or they were a football player or the all-star. Went to college and, you know, broke their collarbone.
Right.
And now they are...
Or innocent. They're in high school. You know, it's a football
tried something
injury.
Out.
It's a soccer injury. It's, mm-hmm. You know, whatever it was innocent enough before right. It started, right?
Yeah, and they wanted to try something out or, you know, at a party. Even, like, I remember back in, like, school and grade school, I was always too afraid to even think about touching anything like that or thinking about... I don't know. My father's a cop, but my mom is the one that I was afraid of. Like my mom would be the one that would like shoot me with the gun. That's what I always looked at it. And like, I was terrified to do anything bad, at a young age. And it's just so ironic. Like it doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter if you come from a really wealthy family or from a family that didn't have anything. It's just, there's something in our brains that, you know, just make you have that addictive personality, whether it be with shopping, like we've said before, or gambling.
Shopping, gambling, smoking.
Yeah, you name it.
Internet.
Yep, it's horrible. But what's good, too, is that people are speaking out, and the only way that we can help more people that are struggling are by, like, doing this kind of stuff. And coming out of the shadows... And sharing things.
I think your guests are here. Come on down.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Hi, how are you, man?
Thanks. Yay. Our guest is here.
I've made it.
Yay. So we have Gil. I know you're probably out of breath because I'm still out of breath.
Yes. I was up the street, and then I was like, I didn't know where I was going.
Down and around town.
But I saw your car, and I saw the little doTERRA sign, and I was like, I know I'm in the right spot.
Yeah, that's awesome. See, that is good. That is another reason why, like, I do essential oils.
I was sitting here watching him, like, run past the windows.
And I was trying to text you while I was, like, right at here, and he's, like, calling me, and he already started. I was like, oh, crap. Up the door, or up the stairs, and to the, I don't even know, right or left, or whatever.
I'm here. That's all that matters.
Yes.
Right? That's right. You're here.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So this is Gil. Gil, this is Art.
Nice to meet you, Gil.
All right. Nice to meet you.
And this is our broadcast, I guess you would say, so people are listening. So if anybody wants to chime in, call in at 609-241-7103.
We squeaked right in, man. I played a 5-minute song.
I know. I texted him like 10 minutes before. I was like, oh, crap. I'm running like 2 minutes late.
That's okay.
Can't help it sometimes.
We made it work.
Yep. So Gil is, you know, a huge part of my recovery. I met him when I first started coming into the rooms, and being able to watch him grow into the person that he is truly amazing. You know, they say that you can see it in someone else before you see it in yourself. And Gil's one of those people that I've definitely saw that in before I saw it in myself. So do you want to share a little bit about what brought you into recovery?
Sure. I come from a family that is... you know, filled with substance abuse, and it goes from alcohol to harder drugs. And, you know, growing up, I hated all those family members.
Right.
I wanted to stay away from all that stuff. And then I saw my older sister, who was my role model growing up, become one of those weekend warriors in high school. And I would come home from being out, and I would see her wrapped around the toilet or in the tub, and I was just like, this isn't what I want. How is this fun?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like,
it's not.
And like, I always say, like, I would be that poster boy that said, you know, say no to drugs. And it just so happened I was born with a concave sternum. So I needed major reconstructive chest surgery at 16.
Wow.
So once again, back to having a surgery type of thing. Sorry.
Yeah, so at 16, got that done. They cracked all my ribs, rewired them together, put a titanium plate in there. And I remember, you know, being in the hospital for a while with the morphine drip and holding that button down. And
did they tell you, like, every time you hit the button, you got your medication?
Every 3 minutes, but I would hold it down.
I know. I thought I was the only one, and I would just be like, mm-hmm. They're, like, looking at me like, Bern, it's not working. I'm like, yes, it is.
You would think it was. But, yeah. And then all of a sudden I get out, and I'm, you know, bedridden for a month, and my mom's feeding me my medication. And then after I could move around, she was like, oh, here's your medication. Mm-hmm. Take it 3 times
a day. Because as good parents, we're making sure you're taking your medication.
Yeah,
that's
prescribed. At 16, why would you abuse something? I didn't even know anything about OxyContin. Right. But mm-hmm. at 16, OxyContin was prescribed to me, and it was supposed to be taken 3 times a day. And I remember where I was when I took 2 instead of 1. And that feeling that came over me, and I said, now I understand. Now I understand yeah. why my family is the way it is. I mean, because I felt a sense of relief.
Right.
I felt the sense that, like, I could fit in wherever, whenever, and finally felt comfortable in my own skin. And then from there until, you know, I found recovery was pure chaos, you know what I mean?
Right.
And there was a lot that happened. I don't need to go into details, but, you know, the progression kicked in. I tried every other substance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was, because of surgeries, I had to get blood drawn all the time. And until I was 18, my mom had to stand right next to me, hold my hand.
Because you didn't want the needle.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my disease took me to use an IV at the end. Right. And, you know, I mean, like, I've been looking back a lot. And it's not even that I've been looking back. Flashbacks start to happen this time of year because my anniversary is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter was born July 4th of 2013. And it's hard for me to say this, but she was born addicted to heroin. And, I mean, thank God she's okay now. She was mm-hmm. in the hospital for 3 weeks. But I still didn't get clean after that. You know, it took me 6 weeks after she was born to finally realize, like, let me at least do it for her. You know, just like every other right. time before, I was doing it for someone else
mm-hmm.
or something or some job.
Or somebody made you yeah, or and forced you.
I did it for her this time. And it wasn't until, like, 2 weeks into treatment that I realized, like, it had to be about me this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not trying to save someone else, not trying to save a job or just get my mom off my back or whatever the case may be. And I feel like that's when my true surrender happened, when I realized this was about me.
Mm-hmm.
And
she's beautiful.
And that is your true surrender. You know, you're really not interested in recovery until, you know what I mean? That aha moment, it becomes about you.
Mm-hmm. Or until you actually, like, try it out and, like, see that, like, people actually enjoy life and, like, have fun in recovery. And you meet the most amazing people and have the most great friends.
Yes, and Burnett, you're one of those people, and, you know.
Oh, thanks.
It's funny, like, I didn't think, like, I mean, I can say I've had friends before, but, like, you know, never true friends, because it was always like, what do you have? How can you help me? And you still see that today, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, even just walking into a meeting and seeing someone like Burn, like, their smile, like, you always attribute something. You're like, oh, they're here. So, like, sometimes you feel better just walking in a room right. with those same people. And from, you know, when I truly surrendered till now, it's just, I mean, you know.
Your life is totally different.
It is. And, like, something happens new, I feel like, every, like, 6 months to a year. I mean, even day to day, I started out not having any rights with my daughter. Today, like, I could say that I have primary physical custody of my daughter.
I'm getting, like, the goosebumps with that, because, like, I remember the whole struggle with going through that. And I remember you being at meetings and being frustrated because you're like, I can't even see her. Like, that doesn't even make sense. And, like, now here we are, and you have, the soul
mm-hmm.
primary. Like, how amazing is that?
Well, a picture popped up on Facebook, the memories, and my first Father's Day with her, I guess that was 2014, was my first overnight with her. And the first time she said, Dada.
Mm-hmm.
And it was me, my dad, and her together. And, you know, I'll never forget that. Like, I'm getting chills now just thinking about it. And, you know, I can only attribute it to doing something different this time.
Right.
And definitely mm-hmm. working a program. And then, like, the jobs came into play and helping people. And then.
And you, like, run recovery houses.
Oh. You know, and this is why we were so happy, you know, for you to join us tonight, because it's important for people to see that there is hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? After addiction, you know, there's a life after.
Yep. And, like, you're not hopeless, no matter where you are in your phase of addiction. It's just a matter of you having that willpower, that drive to just be like, you know what, like, I need help. You have to admit it to yourself that you need help.
And definitely not giving up on yourself. You know, everyone thinks, like, I know I thought that at the end of my run, that I was useless, that no one wanted me around. And yes, you might get that, but truly, like, people want you to see you survive and see you come through this. And at 23, like, yeah, of course, I thought my life was over and the fun was over and it's time to be a dad and get responsibilities together and stuff like that. But I have laughed, smiled, and had more fun in the last 4 years than I think even, like, as a child, you know, because just, you know, new feelings come and new friends come and just the new experiences. Like, you know, I can go wherever, do whatever I want, and I have a great group of guys that, you know, we go everywhere together. And, you know, with a little bit, I guess a little bit over a year, my uncle opened up a recovery house in Delaware County. And he was like, oh, you want to run this place for me? And I said, I don't really know what I'm doing. He's like, don't worry, I don't either. And
we never do at first, huh?
Hey, right? It's, you throw yourself in there. I mean, it's about recovery and keeping people honest.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep. And it was just about being an example in the beginning. And it's funny. Like, I think it was like three out of the six first guys were buddies of mine from high school. And you know, my uncle owns a rehab in Florida called Our Place, and that grew into something beautiful. And he grew up in Delaware County for, you know, he actually was raised in the same house I'm being raised in. Still being
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he just knows how bad it is. You know, he always sends me the articles about, you know, there was in 12 days in Delaware County, I think it was 35 overdoses and, you know, two fatalities. So Delaware County is definitely getting hit, just like, you know, the surrounding areas. And, you know, it was a huge opportunity for the area to, you know, we could only help a certain amount of guys, obviously, because the
Yeah, they can only fit so many.
But it's turned into something beautiful. I hear, you know, nothing but good things. And, you know, I wish, you know, there was an opportunity to do more, but there isn't. And recently I just started working at Malvern Institute.
Congratulations.
I started 2 weeks ago, and really my job is outreach, but like I see it as an opportunity just to help as many people as possible. Right. You know, in my last 2 weeks, I've found more resources than I ever thought were possible. And if anyone calls me, let alone anyone calls Malvern, they will work with your insurance. They'll work wherever you have to get help. And that's, you know, hard to find these days with the amount of, you know, businesses that are popping up to help people. You know, we will help anyone that calls. And it's funny, a lot of our friends work in the call center, and it's just, it's a great thing, because like I love going to work every day. I love finding out new things or helping someone,
and then watching, seeing someone there that like gets it, you know, and I mean, gets released and like does this whole program thing.
There's a guy right now that was calling me 2 months ago, and he's actually still in treatment. He went to extended care down in Florida, and the phone call that I got made me want to cry, you know, because then I talk to the parents, and I love talking to the families, because, you know, they see no hope. They're almost as hopeless as the addict. And then when they hear my story and I tell them that, you know, I have numerous amount of friends that have come through this, it just, you know, you hear it in their voice, a little sign of relief. And, you know, they have to start their own recovery as well. And that's a whole different topic that we could talk about. Yeah. Is, you know, the family.
We've talked about that many times. Yep. You know, when their addict is out getting, you know, help, that's
the
when they
need
to be out getting help.
Absolutely. You know,
I put my mother into shock for 2 months. She's a nurse manager at Penn, and she had a take a leave of absence for 2 months after my last little stint, because she just didn't know.
They can't sleep, they can't eat, they can't
Nothing. I mean, it you almost feel hopeless. And if you're new to the game, you spend all that time really trying to learn as much as you possibly can.
And I know to us, like, I know me personally,
it's a roller coaster life, right?
And like, as addicts, like, you don't think you're hurting anybody but yourself, you know. You're like, I'm not doing anything wrong, but like, we steal time, we steal money. Like, you know, how many times were you and I or someone else like doing the army crawl, you know, to get like things that we needed?
Right.
Like, it's awful.
Yeah, and you know, it comes with the disease, being in denial. You know, I had an intervention with all three of my sisters right after I got in a car accident with my mom's car, and you know, that's probably what sent her into shock. And my sisters, I love, like, I'm big with family. My mm-hmm. family is my whole life. And, you know, I just looked at them like they were crazy, you know, like, and, you know, after getting clear headed and the fog got lifted, I looked back and like how powerful that moment was probably for both of us, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, I can't say that it helped me, but like, it'll keep it green for me, you know, where
I was.
But I
think those are all hard moments for siblings. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because, you know, if you're the one that's the, you know, the addict, you're getting all the attention. You know what I mean there?
That's what we want.
It's true.
You're getting all the attention, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, it's all the drama with, you know, whatever you go work your parents for, to, you know, to get out of them, to feed your addiction, to, you know, and your siblings at some point in time go, whoa, you mm-hmm. know, like, hey, how about me over here? Remember me?
Right, like feeling left out.
Yeah, and hard feelings start to go. I mean, you know, hopefully that all heals, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, through that process of recovery. Yeah, and it all comes back together, and they're understanding enough to know that it wasn't really you. You were Reagan at the time.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, that's what he likes to use that as an example, which is perfect. His daughter is also in recovery.
Oh, wow.
So he gets to look at it as, you know, the parent's perspective, which is perfect for a show like this, you know?
And she was Reagan. I mean, she was from The Exorcist. That mm-hmm. wasn't my daughter, you know? And if you look at it that way, you can almost separate it. Now she's in recovery for, you know, almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I see her. She's back. You know, that person that cares about other people and cares about mm-hmm. her appearance and cares about her hygiene. And
right.
Cares about her job. You know, all those little things that you don't care about when you're in the throes of your addiction.
It's so strange to think back on that and, like, how little we did care.
I know.
About,
I
mean, like, you know, the normal stuff, like your appearance. Like, I think at one point I thought I looked so great. And I look back on pictures, I'm like, oh my God, your face is totally picked at. You look like a rail. You, like, your clothes are falling off you. And now I'm like, my skin looks great, but I eat a lot of Snickers. You know, it's kind of like, which way do I want it? I guess the Snicker version.
Well, the Snickers aren't going to kill you.
Exactly.
You're eating a bag a day.
Mm-hmm. But it truly is, you know, the gifts of recovery. If anybody wants to call in that either needs help or wants to shed light on our topic, our number is 609-241-7103.
I just want to cue this in there because we just started this program at Malvern.
Mm-hmm.
It's called ROC, and it's recovery-oriented community, and it's based towards the families. And that's one thing that, you know, when I went to treatment, they had, like, family groups and sessions like that.
Right.
But this is, like, an ongoing thing where, you know, families can come for sessions or they can call for advice. And
oh, that's great.
It's just a service that Malvern offers because it's, like we said, it's a family disease. Mm-hmm. Even if, you know, the parents don't have it.
Yeah.
You know, once the addict gets involved, you know, they're bringing everyone with them. So this is great. There's also a couple other programs I'll talk about later in the show. Just to throw them in there because they're starting so many things, you know.
And that's what people need to know about this. You know, they need to know about those kind of programs because they need to know where to go when they need the help.
Yep, we have those at City of Angels. I mean, we have our family program that meets on Wednesdays and Fridays, I think. It's about an hour and a half each night. You get a little booklet. It doesn't cost you anything. You know what I mean? But it gives you a chance to really come in and learn. I mean, you know.
And be able to be with people that, like, understand what they're going through.
You know, most of us, you didn't have opioids come walking into your house. I mean, you know, it was pot. It was alcohol. It mm-hmm. was, you know, nothing that heavy, you know, that really.
Yeah, but it's the stuff serious. Like, it's bad.
It is seriously bad. I mean, you know, for you to. My mother just had hip surgery. She's 82, okay? And they were giving her Oxycontin. And I was like, time out.
Right.
Like, I could see her going, you know what I mean? Like, I don't need an 82-year-old addict on my hands mm-hmm. right now, okay?
I was surprised, I know, when I was in treatment, the amount of elderly that were in there. I would never have thought, but it's like your grandma and grandpa that.
You figure they're going for hip replacements and knee replacements, shoulder. I mean, you know. I'm in my 60s now. You know, it's time to start replacing parts. I mean,
mm-hmm. no, you.
But there are alternatives to opioids for pain.
There is.
You know, and you just have to ask the right questions and not do it. I had open heart surgery. I took them for one day. Man, mm-hmm. I was like, no, I'm good, you know, and I threw them down and it was rough, but.
Right.
I'm glad I did it.
It's amazing, like, the amount of pain we can actually endure.
Yeah, I got a pretty high tolerance.
I'm sure, you know, Gil does too, between getting his ribs broken. That is like one of the worst things, because like when you have to cough, right? Because then there's a risk of getting pneumonia.
And it hurts for a long time.
Yeah. And they don't bandage up your ribs. They give you a little pillow to hold on to when you're trying to cough. But
that was the same thing with me, because they had to cut through my rib cage.
Yep.
So they actually gave me a bear that I had to hug when I was going to cough.
Yeah. I had a little girl make me a pillow out of like baby blankets in the hospital.
Yeah.
She was a little girl that was like a patient, because they needed to give me something to cough, and it was the same thing. You probably had.
Yeah, well, when I got two surgeries. So the first one was when I was like 7, and I don't really remember that other than it was done a little differently. And I had to walk around school for the remainder of the school year with a goalie chest protector.
Oh, wow.
Just because I couldn't get nudged. I had to walk class after everybody else was through the halls. You know, I mean, when I remember when, I mean, I looked like I was dying after the second surgery, just because, you know, you're getting all the meds, and then, you know, you're not eating, and, you know, you're mm-hmm. getting stuff fed through liquids. And, I mean, I was a mess then. Not like my addiction, just, you know, from the actual surgery.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I still hug a pillow at night.
Yeah. You know? We got to get on one of those Prego pillows. It's like comfy, you know?
Yeah, they are.
You get used to that kind of stuff.
Body length pillow.
Yeah, uh-huh. Exactly. Because you do. You have to learn how to sleep a certain way. You know, these are things that like will carry with you. Now, do you experience like chronic pain from that? Like, you know, when it's going to rain?
It's more discomfort than anything. I have like one rib that like dislocates and relocates. But nothing.
Fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing that I would never take pain medicine for.
Mm-hmm.
The one doctor I used to work at the University of Pennsylvania Hospital, and the one doctor was like, "Oh, well, we could do pain management, or you could start lifting weights." So I started lifting weights, and it actually hurt more.
Right, of course.
He was like, "Oh, you need to build muscle around it, yada yada yada." But yeah, so I mean, I deal with it, and if I, you know, feel that I'm in a lot of pain, like I need to talk about it, because, you know, because I use for so long, my mind does get triggered sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, I know, we'll take that pain away.
You, especially when you're in pain, you know, mm-hmm. It does. It's a first thought. It doesn't have to be the acting thought, but I mean, there's a lot of times for me, it's the first thought.
It doesn't even have to be physical pain, you know, emotional pain.
Yeah. This is true.
That works too, right?
Yep. But I know, like, for me, even the last couple of days, like, my back has been bothering me so bad, where, like, that thought, like, oh, I know what could take care of this quickly, but it doesn't. It just masks the symptoms. So, like, I find alternative solutions to, like, help deal with it, you know? Might stretch a little bit more, or might...
Deep blue.
Yeah, exactly. Use some lotions and potions, you know, my oils, whatever it may be, some yoga, stretch. You'd be surprised, but like how hanging upside down helps your back out like tremendously. So I don't have one of those like cool bars. I wish I
did. I was wondering that, because like that's that guy, that old guy who like sells the.
He like jumps like in the air, like he's 80 something.
Not very high.
But still.
I'm not impressed by that. I'm like, okay. Like,
and you can see like the progression of the machines. Like first it's like wood, and then it's like, I don't know, some kind of trinkets, but.
First it was made out of dirt, and then it went to wood.
Yeah, probably. But no, I'll just like hang off the bed for a couple minutes. And it's like literally I don't know if I'm just extra crazy, but I could like feel my spine like releasing, like fluids.
Well, I would imagine if you really do that, that it releases the pressure off.
Mm-hmm.
There.
That's why everybody, when you get old, you like start to shrink, because your body's just...
Is that what it is?
Eventually, it just like starts to go back down, you know? But yeah, like not a day goes by when I don't experience some kind of pain, whether it's physical, emotional, mental, where that thought might cross my mind, but it's what do I do? Do I act upon it? No. Do I call someone? Yes. Do I go to a meeting? Yes. And I can, like, bitch and moan about it. Oh, sorry. At a meeting. And then I'm like, fine. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't even hurt anymore.
You know, talking about, like, pain management and different alternatives, you know, what I see a lot is, like, people usually don't want to hear the alternatives,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the people that do, like, parents, when, you know, their child gets on pain management, and after the fact that they've had an addiction, they want to blame the doctors. And this person wants to blame that person.
Mm-hmm.
And, I hate like seeing how everyone's just pointing the finger at this person or that person. And, you know, not taking responsibility for mm-hmm. their actions or not taking their recovery serious. Like we said earlier, you know, my true surrender was when I said, this is about me.
Right.
You know, like nowadays, like the big fight is, oh, is addiction a disease or not? And you know what? I'm not here to start that controversy.
Oh my God. Whenever I see that stuff on like Facebook and stuff, I can't even read it because those random times where I get in like the worst spot mentally.
I avoid those conversations. Absolutely. On Facebook.
And, I mean, there's proven fact that treatment does work. You know, there's treatment for everything out there. And for addiction, what has, you know, been studied and proven to work is the continuum of care.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of places are doing nowadays. And not only, you know, going to detox, going to inpatient, maybe going to some aftercare and doing IOP and doing all the things that are available to you, but then when you leave those places is also
really begins.
Yes.
Because you're safe when you're in those places.
Yes.
And you're accountable to somebody. But when, you know, those doors open and you're only accountable to yourself, like, what do you do?
But then there's two types of addictions too. I mean, you know, there's your party boy, you know what I mean, where you just like to get high, you know what I mean? And then there's those people that are, you know, masking their pain from something.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find out what the root of that pain is, or they're not going to.
And a lot of times
they're going to continue the same behavior.
Yeah, from hearing other people that were the party boy, you know, quote unquote, their use into the heavy drugs or, you know, alcohol, or whatever, stems from wanting to fit in and wanting to be the life of the party. So like their emotional pain comes from not feeling a part of.
Well, there's people that are out there that are just functional addicts. I mean, in fact, I'm kind of working on a little project.
I was going to say, is there something you need to share, Art?
I'm not ready to share it yet. But I was gathering some numbers for my project last night, and I had noticed some things like that. You know what I mean? It's there's more to it than...
oh, definitely. Well, when a substance is physically addicting... There's also people play, you know, I see it, especially kids our age. They're like, oh, I was just addicted to opiates. And I definitely can drink alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the statistics that I was looking at last night were 50% of high school students think that it's safer to take prescription drugs than something illegal that you would buy off the streets.
Wouldn't you think? Wouldn't you think that?
I mean, that's their mind thought.
That's what I would think.
To me, you need
it's
to get back into schools. You know what I mean? We need to get into the school system and be talking
yes.
to these kids at an earlier age. You know, I think high school is too late.
And the people that prescribe, too.
You know, all that is happening now. I mean, it's not quite happening at the pace that, you know, the three
like.
Of us would really like to see.
Yeah.
But it is happening nonetheless.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So we just have to go with the flow. We have to continue to do the things that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? To keep the system accountable, that to keep moving it forward through this epidemic.
Right. And like telling and not being ashamed, like if it's your child, okay, not being ashamed to be like, my child is in recovery, or not being ashamed to be the person in recovery and saying, hey, I'm in recovery.
You know, I wasn't, you know, when addiction walked into my house, I wasn't ashamed, man. I told everybody, you know what I mean? Because I want to prevent that another family from having to go what I have to go through. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
you want to know what I know. You don't want to be me.
Right. Did it take you a point, like a little while to get to that point? It
took me a long while to get to
yeah.
that point. I was an angry dude.
Like mm-hmm. just with like my family, my experience. I mean, you know, everybody's different, and that's what like something that I hope that people understand. You know, you can put 10 addicts in a treatment facility or some kind of program, and they're all going to have different experiences, and the families are going to have different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Like my mom kept it a secret until I don't know, and I guess until she had her breakdown and she went to somewhere and said, I need help.
Right.
You know, and you know, that comes with stigma and all that kind of stuff.
But then again, you said your mother was a nurse, right? Or
correct.
In healthcare. Different situation.
Yes.
Than I worked in a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? She's responsible for drugs. if they even begin to think that she's somehow tied to an addict or is an addict or has an addict in her life, guess what? when the pain medication doesn't add up to the inventory, mm-hmm. who's the first person that's, they're coming to?
Yep.
You know, so you don't want to be at work. I mean, I would imagine it depends on what your work is, on whether you go out and you share that. If you're working in a warehouse where, you know what I mean, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But if you're working in a healthcare facility, it makes a whole big difference. And actually, I had that talk with someone several weeks ago. And it was somebody we had, I think, on Johnny Rags' mm-hmm. show. And they explained that, well, I'm a nurse and I really don't want people to know that I'm an addict or I had an addictive past, because when something goes missing, when something's not right, when something's wrong, they're coming to me.
Yeah.
You know, they're pointing at me. And I was like, wow, okay. I mean, naive. I didn't think much of it like that. But yeah, I can see that. I mm-hmm. mean, it carries its stigma still, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It does.
And that's the reason that it hasn't moved as fast as we want it to be in the schools. So I know me personally, I came home from treatment and I went to this, heroin task force meeting in Delaware County. And I had 90 days, and I was in a room full of politicians, parents, other recovering addicts.
Police officers,
state reps, and I'm like, what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. And then I went into, like, a little small group with some people, and we had, like, a little project to do. And, you know, everybody was just so happy that the input I put into it. But because of the stigma, you know, I was like, what about the schools? And you had to, you know, get background checks. You had to do this. They had to watch your program. Like, it's still hard today to get in the schools. There's this one program called NOPE that, you know, I think it's nationwide now, but still they don't hit everyone. And what they're sharing more is about the deaths of young folks, like, you know, high school students and all. And I don't think that's the angle.
You know what, though? When we go out, because I go out with kids, you know what I mean, and have them speak. I mean, they don't want to hear from me. I can give them statistics. I can, you know, give them a few things.
I think they need to hear from the actual
They
addict.
Need to hear from kids that are their age that they can relate to. You know what I mean? Even if they are already graduated from high school, you know what I mean, in their early 20s or early teens or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. You're a living testimonial, you know what I mean, of what's going on. And those kids open up, you know what I mean, more than anything else. We did Ocean County College in May, I think it was. And we did two separate settings where they brought high school kids in and then, you know, they brought the next ones in. And we did a whole panel discussion, and they were all, like, you know, standing there with their mouths open. They had a lot of good questions. And we got invited back to go speak to them, you know, in October this year mm-hmm. when they actually start back to school. So it's there. But it has to be different programs based on their education level. There should be some type of education in the elementary school. I don't think it has to be hardcore what you'd be doing in middle school.
Right.
I think middle school, they're much more impressionable. If they're going to be doing something, that's where they're going to start. You know what I mean? In that age group.
See, but that's still hard because I'm, like, thinking back to when I was in school, in high school, and we would have people come on stage and talk about other – I don't even know what they would talk about.
I know, but that was the DARE like, programs and stuff like that. None of that stuff worked.
I would never be like that.
We all let that guy down.
You know what? And they're bringing the DARE program back, and they're adjusting it to the opioid crisis. Now, mm-hmm. I haven't seen that yet, but, you know, it probably makes a good idea, you know, to revamp that program.
And I feel like it was always someone older speaking. If I'm like, trying to think, like – I was like the brat where I'm just like, I would sleep.
You know, there's a lot
session.
Of different things that you can really do to impact.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Young people.
And touching the parents, too, just as a preventative thing.
Well, you know, the one of the things that we're doing through City of Angels and our, you know, our Gloucester chapter, they have it so going on down there. Actually, I want to get them on the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So they can come up and actually talk about what they're doing down there.
That'd be great.
Dr. Baird, the prosecutor's office.
I hear amazing things about City of Angels.
They are truly amazing down there. They put together what's called In Plain Sight, and it's a traveling bedroom that they actually take a drug kit from the prosecutor's office, and they hide drugs in this bedroom, and the parents go through and try to find them.
Hmm.
When they're done, we go through and show them what they didn't find.
I was going to say, I guarantee there is some... Wow. So many more spots that they didn't even...
Right. I mean, the things, the false cans, the all, you know what I mean? All the stuff that's
and
out
they
there.
Sell that stuff at, like, your drugstores on the corner.
I'm going to Atlantic City. It'll be...
Everywhere.
At every place that you walk into mm-hmm. off the boardwalk.
Even, like, you know, they'll have a Coca-Cola can that'll feel like it's an actual Coca-Cola can. and it's heavy and it does nothing's like opening it, and there's like a little twist on bottom thing. Like they've perfected that.
But you know, it really gives parents a chance to get a hands-on look. You know, these are tools that weren't available before. You know, and whatever's there, you know, whatever can be made available. There's a lot of organizations out there: City of Angels, Recovery Advocates, TOPAC,
Recovery Centers of America.
Recovery, you know, I'm just talking about mom and pop places. You know,
yeah,
what I mean,
I
not
mean,
even
just,
treatment
there's,
centers.
There's so much.
There's a lot out there, you know, across the country, and this is an epidemic. You know, I mean, go out and get educated. You know, find out what you can do to help. Mm-hmm. Volunteer. You know, we don't have enough hands on deck to handle this.
And I don't think it's. I honestly don't think it's going to get any better before it gets worse.
No, I
you
agree.
Know, and obviously we see that today with, especially our area. You know, I mean,
it's like nonstop.
Hey, we were losing 129 people a day, right? That's what it was. It's like 149 people a day now.
And
it's awful.
And everyone says, "Oh, we need more beds. We need more beds." But honestly, there are plenty of beds. Mm-hmm. It's just
Not even.
When are they willing to get help?
Yeah. You know what? We need more recovery houses. We need more IOP.
Correct.
You know, if you have insurance, these are all great things for you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's when, you know, the state comes in and they don't.
I can tell you, nobody that we deal with through City of Angels, hardly any of them have insurance.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's that waiting period, and we have to get you in someplace to detox. And then, if we can get you a bed and then IOP and then. You know, you shouldn't be going home after your treatment. You should be going to a recovery house where you can be kept honest and accountable. And, you know, you're with like-minded people going to meetings and everything that's there. At some point in time, you're going to have that life back. But, right, you need that piece after treatment to really keep yourself honest and stay on track, right?
Yeah, and even, too, like, there's times where, like, I'll make my home group throughout the week, which it's been a lot lately because my schedule's been so filled. But, like, when I would go to meetings, like, you know, a few times a week, like, that is literally the medicine, like, that I need. It's just, like, you know, if you have diabetes and you need to take insulin every day, like, you know, the meetings and connecting with people like me that are also in recovery and, like, doing a program, that's how I get my fulfillment of the medication that I need.
Right. And we
you can't just stop.
And we need more aftercare and recovery houses, you know? And we need to be
Definitely.
Able to get people into... When someone's ready to go.
Now, the thing that's ironic about getting recovery houses, there's a friend of mine that has many, many years in the program, and he's tried to purchase houses in my actual town and some others. They will not approve it.
NIMBY.
They will
it's
not
NIMBY.
Approve it.
Not
and
in
that
my
is
backyard.
Like, what do you do? Do you have to lie? You get the house, and you have to lie about the residents that are going to be in that house.
Well, there are areas that are recovery house friendly. I mean, you know, Levittown is.
Yeah. Well, Harrisburg has been formulating bills for I would say 8 months to a year now, and you know the state's going to start trumping, you know, counties and towns, and
That's
you know
good.
They're going to fight it all they want, but yet. This is where the laws come from.
I get right. There's not any riffraff coming to your neighborhood because there's a recovery house.
Right.
There. It's just not going to happen. First off, they're not going to do it there. They're going to go away from there to do anything that, you know, that they might even be considering doing.
Exactly.
In the beginning, when we opened our house, we did.
Didn't you have some issues?
Yeah, like the first year.
When the neighbors finally found out it was a recovery house, it's like.
They're like, oh, it's like a frat. But at the same time. They realized what good guys we were, that we realized, they realized that we, you know, run a strict curriculum and that, like, if you do not follow, then we, you know, place you somewhere else. And that's how this people around us began to realize right. that we were good, you know?
You know, people just don't always take the time to really find out, right, before they just form a judgment
right.
based on that first impression. And that's
I formed a judgment before I even...
Recovering addict, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, here's my thing. You know, those people... Where were they? I think Christy was opening. They were opening a Seabrook house or something up in North Jersey. And the neighbors were out there like
picket
screaming
fence.
And picketing and yelling.
Mm-hmm.
And
not in our town.
I love
that
guy because he just stops and yells right back at them.
Right.
you know, love him or hate him, I he's doing a lot for the recovery community.
And it's a shame because maybe one day that parent will be running, crying.
And that's exactly it. Is like, you know what, man? Mm-hmm. My kids walk past a recovery house, you know, every single day, and there's no problem whatsoever. And I hope your kids don't never need that service. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Because then it'll change, right? And maybe that's what the kids need to see. They need to see that there's these houses that people have to go to if they don't die from picking up.
How did Spain get rid of this problem, right? They didn't legalize anything. They decriminalized it. And mm-hmm. instead of putting people in jail, they started putting people in recovery.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they tripled their budgets for recovery services for people. You know what I mean? It didn't matter whether you had money or not. You know what I mean? If you needed services, you got them. You know what I mean?
And wouldn't be a jail sentence be more expensive for the state to pay for than it would be to put someone in treatment?
Actually, you can look at any single county right here in the state of New Jersey, and it is cheaper to put somebody in recovery than it is to... I mean, what's it going to cost to put somebody in recovery?
I know that one of the treatment centers, it was... for a detox, it was like $650 for a night.
But it's like $25,000 to incarcerate someone, and it's
definitely cheaper than
jail
incarceration, right?
It's like $1,200 for a night.
It depends. I mean, like if the state's paying for it, they the treatment center doesn't charge.
And even here in Jersey,
it's cheaper.
Even here in Jersey, at Fort Dix was a military base there.
Mm-hmm.
That property is owned by the state of New Jersey that base was on. So there was actually a prison there. Okay? That's now a recovery prison.
Wow.
So that if you're addicted and your last year of your sentence, you can go to that prison and enter that program, and you'll spend your last year, you know what I mean, recovery, preparing yourself to get released
out.
Right.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't know that.
But that's what needs to happen. You can't incarcerate people and not offer them any help whatsoever, because what's going to happen? You're not going to break that cycle. They're going to come back and do the same thing over again, you know?
And there's a lot of times, too, you know, they get put in the jail, and there's just other types of things in jail circulating around, you know?
Yeah, I visited drug court on, I think it was Tuesday night, and just saw how it worked. And, you know, I don't know. It was a great experience. At some points, like, I almost wanted to cry, because the judge definitely wasn't in recovery. But to see how he treated, you know, the person that was honest in the program, didn't lie about anything, and, like, was doing well, but once you lied to him, and he knew you lied to him, then he, you know, all right.
It's over.
Yeah. But
you know, that's what we have down, you know, in Gloucester. They're not going to put recovery coaches in the courtrooms.
Yes. That's what we're working on as well.
You know, where they're going to have, you know, when you sit down to do mediation, there'll be a recovery coach. So there's somebody from the courts, your lawyer, their lawyer, whatever that is, and a recovery coach to help mediate your recovery.
That's what we need.
And that's the hardest part when you deal with politics and people who are with the law and they don't understand recovery. It's like they just want to, you know, pound that gavel and say, you're going away.
But see, we do a lot of that now, especially here in Mercer County. You know, but we have 12 municipalities here, and I think we have half of those on board in our care program.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where if someone gets arrested, DUI, possession, something like that, you still get arrested. But then they call a recovery coach in to meet with you. And you're given, you want to go to recovery, boom, right then and there. You go to jail, you go to recovery. If you choose the recovery part of it, if you follow the program and do everything you're supposed to do, within a year that gets expunged, it never happened. And I think that's an important piece, because you're 20-something years old. You did something stupid when you were in the throes of your addiction that you probably wouldn't have did if you were, you know what I mean, in your right mind.
Mm-hmm.
Why should you have to carry that mistake around
for the rest of your life? Right.
This gives you a chance to rectify that and erase it. Now, if you make it into the newspaper, God bless you, because that just doesn't go away. You know what I mean? My daughter ran into that. I mean, you know, you Google her name. There she is, you know, convicted of nothing. All the charges were dropped.
But it'll carry with her.
But it's there when you Google her name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what does that mean? She's never going to be able to have a good job, or she's going to have a job and then somebody's going to Google her name at some point in time and go, you need to come here, mm-hmm. and we have to let you go, or you know what I mean, whatever that is. And
now I feel like there's so many people that are affected by it. Like, if you go into a job and you apply for a job, they'll ask you all those questions, and if you're totally honest with them, they don't see no point in not giving you a chance. And also too, like, I feel like 9 out of 10 of the times that the either law enforcement or judges or anybody that condemns you being, or, you know, an addict is someone that has, as someone once told me, they've been hurt really bad by someone with an addiction, or they've not experienced it yet. It hasn't walked into their door. You know, they haven't had to have a child that went through this, and, you know, God forbid they ever do. Let's hope they don't.
I wasn't blessed with just one. I had two.
Right. You know, like,
just when I thought it was safe, it wasn't, you know, it started all over again.
Mm. And it's even too, like, I fear for, like, the kids that, like, maybe aren't addicts that will go to a party for the weekend and want to try something. And then, like, you know, they're trying it and it's laced with something and they're dead.
Well, the things that we're getting now is kids are holding what they call farm parties in high school, which means they're going to your medicine cabinet and pulling out something, and they take it and throw it in a bowl at somebody's house. And then, you know, they pick something out to take it and see what it does to you. Now, if they go to my medicine cabinet, they're going to have spot-on cholesterol, right. Spot-on blood pressure. You know,
mm-hmm.
Mine, I only have oils in there now, so that's all they got.
There's a great video out there that Jim Wahlberg actually put out, and it was called If Only.
Yeah, If Only.
Yeah, and that's exactly what that was about, you know, and something happened. You know, because there's so many stories out there of, you know, the one and only time that their son used, they die. Or,
and that's what happens. We had a kid, man. His parents came to what we call the Breakfast Club on Sunday mornings. You know, that club is, you know, when you have a child that's still on the street and not in recovery yet, you know, where you're not sleeping, you know. I had moms that had, they were tracking their kid. Look, they're here. And I'm like, that's nice. You should throw that phone away. Mm-hmm. You know, it's,
yep.
They still didn't go into recovery till they were ready to go. You know what I mean? When it was their aha moment.
Mm-hmm. But I know we're almost wrapping up for tonight, and it was a wonderful show. So before we end, the little saying I'm going to finish up with is 10 guides to good human relations. Speak to people. There's nothing as nice as a cheerful greeting. Call people by name, not names. The sweetest music is to hear one's name called. Have humility. There is something to be learned from every living thing. Be friendly. If you have to have a friend, be one. Be cordial. Speak and act as if everything is a pleasure to you. Be interested in others. You can like almost everybody if you try. Be generous with praise, cautious with criticism. Give your word, then keep it. Be considerate of the feelings of others. And be alert to give service. What counts most in life is what we do for others. So my name's Bernadette, and thanks, Gil, for coming.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And thank you, Art, for doing all the mechanical stuff that I will never be able to do.
It's a pleasure to be here again.
And everybody have a good night. We're out.
Good night.
see.